The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Want the real story behind the sound bites and headlines? Let's find the facts. Remember, it's not a conspiracy theory if it's the truth. You are not paranoid or confused. You just need to know.
Welcome, everybody, to another week of Need to Know. Kip Kiefer with you on this new week of hopefully entertaining and informative commentary. You know, I was laughing a little bit as I was starting to formulate my thoughts about what we're going to talk about this week. An ad that came across on Tony Curry Radio a couple of weeks ago basically said, tune in to Need to Know because you never know what Kip Kiefer is going to say. Well, you know, there's a pretty good reason for that. The main reason is Kip Kiefer really isn't sure what he's going to say. So that kind of adds up, and it creates a little symmetry to that tagline. That's absolutely true. Have some thoughts on a big event that happened in the world at the end of last week, and we'll get to that in just a moment. First, please allow me the liberty to give a shameless plug to our other program that appears on Tony Curry Radio. It's Wanna Bet, our show that we put together out in Las Vegas back in the late summer, put all the pieces together and did some of the segments that we're going to be talking about and displaying. We're proud to have that on the network here on Tony Curry Radio. And basically, it is a rundown each week of all aspects of football investment. In other words, the sports betting kind of aspect to the game that has become a lot more prominent in recent years. You know, for a long time, it was kind of the elephant in the room. The football folks, the National Football League, particularly the purveyors of college football, didn't even want to acknowledge its presence. But now it's here, and it's here to stay, and it's really a major concept that's sweeping the airwaves. There's a radio station in Providence, Rhode Island, that is dedicated to 24/7 sports betting. And it's something that's really kind of taken off and has become far more mainstream. Almost all the prognostications of each week's game is a part of the formats of all the weekly preview shows that you see on the various networks, and there's a lot of them that cover football. So we're on that trend, and my partner in crime on that is Case Kiefer, who is the sports editor of the Las Vegas Sun out in Nevada. He's our guy in the desert. We sat down in a couple of the nicer sports books in town and had the perfect backdrop for that series and talked about all different aspects. We're going to get into the next couple of weeks some things that I find absolutely fascinating, including the analytics part, the data that is generated now in every little aspect of everything having to do with games on the field. And it's fascinating how that has become the science behind people formulating their opinion on games. All the different little statistical anomalies and performance assessments of individual players and teams and tendencies. It is really fascinating. And I get into that conversation with Case, who's become one of the most knowledgeable experts in the country on all aspects of football analytics and performance analysis. So I think you'll really enjoy that. Please tune in every weekend here on Tony Curry Radio. It's run frequently, and I think you'll really enjoy the program. We had a good week this week. Case went 3-1. He is one of the really foremost, and he's award-winning. He's been recognized by services that actually track performance by people that are picking games every week. He opened 3-1 on the NFL yesterday after going a 2-2 on his college picks, which we have up every week as well. And I had a 3-2 week. So between the two of us, we were 8-5 against the spread. So that's pretty good performance. If we can deliver that every week, we will be very happy and give you the chance to profit a little bit and have a rewarding way to have fun while you watch all the games. So it's Wanna Bet right here on Tony Curry Radio every week. Let's get into Need to Know today and talk about what I think you need to know, maybe some facts that you weren't aware, and really the motivation behind Need to Know. In my earliest discussions with Tony about what kind of show I wanted to do, I basically expressed to him that I would just like to have the opportunity to just kind of, just like I said in the open, talk about what's on my mind. And again, I would love to have this great concerto of, you know, well-timed thoughts, and they're weaved together and they build up to some great, you know, monumental crescendo of an ending. But that's kind of difficult to do. I don't script this. I know what I want to talk about. And I think it's more valuable if I just sort of do it, you know, pretty much off the top of my head. Having stuck around for a while on this earth and gained a little bit of knowledge and perspective, I think I have a lot better chance to convey a thought, an idea, a phrase, a word, something to you that would allow you to really kind of activate something that I think is lacking in a lot of us. And I'm guilty of this in, to a great degree too, of always being so busy and so focused on things in the moment that I think we've kind of lost the art of just sitting down and thinking about things and processing things and developing our own perspectives in this headline and soundbite words world. So all that being said, if there's anything I can convey that will kind of trigger that thought process for you, that's really kind of the motivation here. And if it's one thought or idea, that's a useful session here on the program. I want to talk about the passing of Queen Elizabeth II last week. And maybe it's a little bit of a departure from some of the areas we generally get into, but it really fits in consistently with a lot of what we've been talking about, particularly as we are hearing actual dissent and backlash and resistance to mourning the passing of a 96-year-old human being who presided on the British monarchy, that was on the throne for every day of almost everybody listening to this show's life. She was the Queen of England, ascended to the throne in 1952, and was on the job, I guess you could say, for 70 and a half years. Just think about that. That is absolutely remarkable. The longest running monarch in the history of the throne in England, 70 and a half years, Queen Elizabeth II, before her passing last Thursday. And there are people kind of trashing her legacy now. There are people that are saying some pretty hateful things and good riddance. And one professor at Carnegie Mellon tweeted, "I hope she had an excruciatingly painful death because of all the atrocities that she was responsible for in her life." We have so little respect for somebody whose life comes to an end that has been a prominent figure. And for her to be not personally recognized, but become this symbol of, you know, it completely, the same thing they complain about, the dehumanization of people, they're guilty of the same transgression themselves when they do that. This was a human being. This wasn't a symbol. Yes, she was the occupier of the throne and the biggest colonial monarchy in the history of the world. But for reasons I'm going to explain to you, I really think this trashing of Queen Elizabeth II in death is highly inappropriate and very disturbing. There's so many interesting aspects to her story. The main one was she was not really a likely candidate to ascend to the throne of Great Britain. She was born in 1926 to the second son of the sitting king, the king at the time, King George V, her grandfather. Her father was the second son of that ruling king. His oldest son, Edward, was the one who was in line for the throne. And when King George died in 1934, George did ascend to be the new king of England. So her uncle was on the throne, and he was a bachelor. He was just 40 years old when he took over. He had never been married, so he had no heirs. He looked like, you know, at 40 years old, he was in for a long reign. But there was a little bit of a complication that's maybe not part of the story. You may be aware of how Elizabeth wound up in that position. Her uncle at the time, just that he was ascending to the throne, had become romantically involved with an American socialite named Wallace Simpson, W-A-L-L-I-S, Wallace Simpson. She had left America after being married to a Navy pilot and was living in London. They hit it off big time and became very involved, and it was a very secret situation because, gasp, the shock, the horror. She was a divorcee. That was not sanctioned by the Church of England, and it was certainly not something that the King of England should be engaged in. But long and short of the story, after just about a year on the throne, when the scandal broke that this is who he was wanting to marry, there was just this tremendous swirl of controversy. And in the midst of all that, Edward called a press conference, did a radio address, and said, you know, the tremendous demands of being the king is something that he doesn't feel like he's able to fulfill without the support and companionship of the woman he loves. So basically, he turned in his keys and handed over the throne because he was in love with somebody that, from the standards of the time, wasn't acceptable to be his mate because of her divorce status, not to mention the fact that she wasn't even British. So he stepped down, he gave it up, and passed it on to his younger brother, Queen Elizabeth's father, who became the king at that time. Her father, George VI, reigned for another quite a while after that, and actually endured being on the throne during World War II. And of course, I think everybody realizes that Britain was just continuously bombarded. The Battle of London, the courageous stand that the citizens there took against acquiescing to the Nazi terror of just untold destruction and death, particularly in and around London. Imagine Elizabeth as a young woman growing up in that environment during World War II at a very, very young age. And famously, King George refused to leave London and go out and seek sanctuary in places that were a lot safer. The Queen Mother, her mother, insisted that they stay with her husband. And so night after night, this relentless bombing was going on in London. And Elizabeth and her sister Margaret and her parents endured all of that. Of course, finally, the war ended in 1945, and the situation stabilized back to a rebuild and just a kind of a refocus on life as it, you know, trying to get back on track to a regular existence after the absolute tragedy and despair of a world war that basically destroyed the larger part of Europe. In a couple of more years, in the early 50s, her father passed away, and all of a sudden, this 25-year-old Elizabeth became the Queen of England. And again, it was totally not predictable based on the circumstances of the succession. But there, but here we are, the roll of dice that life is, this 25-year-old young lady who had been raised in a time of understanding the commitment and the duty that's required with being in this position. Now, there's no question that there's unbelievable amounts of privilege and circumstance and palaces and accolades and, you know, all of the things that come with public life and being of royal blood. But still, the practical matter is that just like her uncle had given up the throne in pursuit of his, you know, personal desires, it comes at a big price. You basically devote yourself to the service that's required of the position. And at 25 years old, that's a big step for anybody, particularly in that era of time, the early 1950s, being a female, tremendous responsibility put on the shoulders of a very young woman. And that's how she lived her life for the next 70 years. A life of service, a life of duty, a life of tradition, and I think if you really look at the complexities of her reign, a lot of the people around her, a lot of her family, there was a lot of different traumas and changes and acclimation to the modern world. She had to endure many different family crises. Of course, her son, who's the new king now, Charles of England, married to Princess Diana Spencer. And I think most know the story that Diana became increasingly political, much to the chagrin of the queen, who, again, came from a school of thought that it's really best to put your personal thoughts aside and just execute your duties. So there was a famous schism between the queen and her son's choice for his wife. That marriage ended in divorce, of course, when Charles had continued to cavort with Camilla, who had been a longtime love of his, and Diana's dissatisfaction with situation. And of course, she died tragically in the accident in Paris with the Fayyad son, who was her new boyfriend, and just public, just appallingly sad story and a lot of different twists and turns. And Diana, being beloved by the British people, really put Elizabeth in a really tough position where publicly she had to kind of step out of herself as queen and comfort a nation that was in terrible mourning. And she really didn't understand that role very well and struggled with it. But that was just one of the many things in her time that she endured. Of course, recently her grandson, Harry, and his American actress, Meghan Markle, being very vocal about dissatisfaction with a lot of aspects of the monarchy. So basically, living in the bubble of royalty and privilege did not exempt her from a lot of the really difficulties of conducting a life that all of us have in common. You might be wondering if you haven't been really following it, there's been a lot of dissent, a lot of voices really criticizing her for her role. And again, let's put all that in perspective. The big thing is that she's being criticized for being the symbol on as queen of colonization, and what a lot of people are characterizing as a terrible oppressive expansion of English influence into a lot of places that have dramatically disaffected the indigenous people in a lot of the lands that they expanded to and colonized. And, you know, to put that on Elizabeth, who stepped onto the throne in 1952, do you know when the first English monarch is recognized by historians? The year 802, not 1802, not 200 years ago, 802. That was about 1,200 years ago. That's more than 10 decades ago. You know, if you think about that a little bit, actually 12 decades, if you think about that, and that's how many monarchs and kings and queens there have been, and all of the history of, again, colonization and expansion of the empire, that's a lot to put on the latest occupier of the throne, all of that history. And it's not as if the day that she was coronated as queen in 1952, what was she supposed to do? Call a press conference and disavow 1,200 years of history and say, you know, we probably were wrong to try to expand our empire and try and go in and colonize undeveloped places around the world and acquire resources and riches and opportunities for our own people. You know, sorry about that. We're gonna go ahead and make restitution and sincerely apologize for all of our imperialism and all the transgressions and on all the heartbreak and inconvenience that might have caused for a lot of people for the last 1,200 years. You know, it's kind of like if you were in a family that had a business that had been built up by generations of your predecessors. Let's say it's a vineyard or something, and you find yourself in the position after being indoctrinated into that culture for your entire life, that suddenly you are the one who's running the industry and making the decisions and trying to move your organization that you've inherited forward. That's basically what Elizabeth stepped into in this situation. It was a changing world, and she did exactly what she's supposed to do as the ceremonial, and that's a big word here, head of state, execute the formal things that her office or her monarchy demanded. But the day-to-day governmental decisions in England, long ago passed from the monarchy to the prime minister, the House of Commons, the House of Lords, all the various public local elected officials, all the way on down, just like it is in our country. So her role was more ceremonial, and to pin on her all of this, this empire building of her country, again, over 1,200 years is really unfair. And if you think about it, it isn't like England invented that situation. This has been going on since the beginning of civilization. There are certainly numerous examples all the way back to the beginnings of time where, you know, people are and cultures have tried to develop and expand and give more opportunities again for their empires to be in control of more and more land and more resources and create opportunities for their citizens. And this has gone on. This is humanity. This is what it's all about. It's who we are, and the people criticizing it, I know, have hundreds of descendants that engaged in the same activities all the way back to, the beginnings of time. All the great civilizations, the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Romans, all of them colonized and changed lives, and some for the better, some not so much. Again, it's kind of the roll of the dice that we have as human beings. So to pin that on her is really unfair. A woman who maintained her dignity and executed her office flawlessly throughout her entire life. And, you know, I think about the, remember the Monty Python movie, Life of Brian? There's a great scene in there where the People's Judean Front, who is against the Romans taking over and colonizing their country, this guy's making a fiery speech. And he says, "What have the bloody Romans ever done for us?" And there's a voice in the back goes, "Oh, the aqueduct?" He goes, "Well, yeah, well, okay, yeah, the aqueduct." And he goes, "Sanitation, roads." They just start rattling off from the audience all these different things: law and order, public health, you know, education. And it gets to be a list of about 25 things of how the bloody Romans have really kind of revolutionized and improved their society. And I think it's a great illustration of exactly what I'm talking about, that yes, displacing people and modernizing areas through colonization is something that you can certainly find a lot of fault with, but it's just the course of human events. This has been the procedure, and it's kind of hard to now pin that on people from the modern world, but that's kind of what we're living through in a lot of these circumstances, where you're applying this modern day school of thought to something that was just elementary in terms of how things were rolled out, you know, way back when we were happening. So the final bit of evidence on that is it isn't just the big powerhouse, rich, oppressive nations that roll in and create this kind of discord. If you go back in history, and a lot of this is coming from the British colonization of India and Africa, but if you go back in time and look at all these tribal circumstances in these kind of wide open land masses and continents, there was certainly always, including here in on our continent, where Native Americans get a lot of that sympathy for being pushed aside, but they themselves engaged in tribal warfare and attempts at expansion, and definitely trying to improve their circumstances and their situations. So even the people that are, you know, being sympathized with and the reason that others are being demonized conducted those sort of things themselves. Again, it's just the course of human events, and it's something that you really need to think about when you consider all that. So at the end of the day, I'm going to say that Queen Elizabeth II, monarch for 70 and a half years, the longest run of any person ever to occupy the throne in the British Empire, over 1,200 years, deserves respect, deserves recognition and sympathy to her family at her passing, and to the people of Great Britain, because she is a symbol to them. She symbolized a tradition and a history and a lot of different things that are very important to people, not only in England, but do you know that British Empire is still the head of government ceremonially for Australia and Canada and a lot of the Caribbean. So the empire continues even with the passing of their longtime monarch, Queen Elizabeth. Just some food for thought, some things I thought you needed to know. I hope something in that gives you the chance to think about it when you hear people actually trashing the passing of this remarkable, extraordinary woman who lived that way her entire life. That's all the time we have for this week, Kip Kiefer. I always enjoy visiting with you on Need to Know. Look forward to being with you again next week. Have a fantastic couple of days, and another football weekend is right around the corner, so don't miss one a bit.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.